like that's better. ॐ ब्रह्मानन्दं परमसुखदं केवलं ज्ञानमूर्तिं द्वन्द्वातीतं गगनसदृशं तत्त्वमस्यादिलक्ष्यम् एकं नित्यं विमलमचलं सर्वधि साक्षिभूतं भावातीतं त्रिगुणरहितं सद्गुरुं तं नमामि. ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै. ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः. हरिः ॐ. ॐ समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम्. Hari Om everybody. So 2 weeks ago, we were on verse 7. Mamai Vausho Jivaloke, where Bhagwan has now started the topic of Jiva, because so far he explained Jagat and then he said that his pada has to be reached. But who is supposed to be reaching that pada? That's what Bhagwan had not said. He also gave the method Nirmana Mohan Jatasanga Dosha. That was the method of reaching, and his position Yad Gatva Na Nivartante. So his position is such that having reached there, no one comes back. But the question remains as to who exactly is trying to reach or should try to reach that pada. And the answer is Jiva. And therefore now Bhagwan has to explain who this Jiva is. And that is what Bhagwan is doing. He says, Mama Eva Aunsha Jivaha. So my Aunsha, my part only this Jiva is. And therefore it is Sanatan, because I am Sanatan, I am eternal. Therefore my part is also eternal. We saw in detail this Jiva being part. How does there be a part in infinity? So we have those two theories, theory of reflection and the theory of space. Just as one sun, when there are many, many buckets, it can reflect in as many buckets. So each reflection can be considered as a part of the sun. And when the bucket and the water disappear, or if the reflection disappears, or if the water is muddy, murky, whatever, it is not, nothing is touching the sun. The sun remains only one, and you see these many, many reflections. And we saw how Bhagavan Shankaracharya explained in Vivek Churamani, the one who thinks that that reflection is the sun is ignorant, is foolish. Okay, so this is what Bhagavan means here by Mama Eva Aunsha, means it is my reflection. I reflect in the mental pool, and there are, because of the differences in the media, there's a difference in the media, therefore the reflections appear different, though I am only one. The sun is only one, but if the water is dirty, then the reflection is not going to be as bright. But if the water is extremely clean and pure, then the reflection is going to be very bright. Or if the water is shaking, then the reflection is also appearing to shake. That doesn't mean the sun is shaking. The sun is never shaking. Okay, so the other theory is the space, where we say that this is the pot space, or if you take the house, you say this is the kitchen space, and this is the living room space, and this is the bedroom space. But if you break the walls, then all the space merge into one. So it is actually only space. There is nothing like pot space. There is only space, that's it. But with the upadhi of the pot. And I gave you the example of the directions. So there are really no direct, space is infinite. And there are no directions in space, northeast, west, south. But taking the upadhi of the sun. So we see the sun is rising. It's not rising. The earth is moving, but our perception is this. And then we say, oh, the direction, this direction is east because the sun is rising there. And then opposite to it is west, and to its right is north, and to its left is south. And that's how we have superimposed the directions on space. There cannot be any directions in space. So we can say that north is a part of space, or east is a part of space, but really there is no part, really. And therefore this jiva, when we talk of infinity, we have to think, can there really be a part in infinity? In finite objects, yes, there can definitely be a part. In our own body, you see, there are so many parts. There is hands and legs and nose and eyes and ears and hair and everything. So there are many, many parts in finite objects, and they are all real also. At that level, they are all real. Of course, the hand is real, the leg is real, everything is real in this. At that level. But when you go into infinity, if you say that there is a part of infinity, you have negated infinity. Because when you say part, there is a boundary. There you are imposing a boundary on it. Like, so infinity, the infinitiness of Brahman is lost. And that cannot ever be lost. Because why? Then the scriptures get falsified. And scriptures can never get falsified. So this jiva ultimately is only an imagination. It is a superimposition on pure consciousness. There was a question, very good question. And I answered it at the highest level. And then I thought, okay, that was the highest level. I need to come down a little bit also. Question is, why even bother with this jiva business then? If jiva is a superimposition, it is an illusion, it is nothing but the Supreme Consciousness. Why is Bhagwan introducing jiva? So the one thing to understand here is that, which I told you last time, is that for us in the state of ignorance, when we are considering ourselves to be the body, suddenly to say that you are formless and you are, you know, infinite and this and that, it's a huge jump. It's a huge jump. Of course, there are people like Bhagwan Shankaracharya who have done that. Raman Maharshi has done that. But there are very few exceptions. We can count them on the fingers. But for ordinary people, most of the people, that would be a big jump. It would be like suddenly you're putting a child from grade 2 into grade 5. Now that child is going to get lost. Okay. So that's why this middle step is given. So start considering yourself as the jiva, not at least as the body. It is a little bit easier to consider that I am the embodied one and I am not the body, but the embodied one. The other reason is that if we were to say that jiva is an illusion, some people would misunderstand it and go to a very licentious behavior. You know why? Because, oh, jiva is an illusion. That means what? Well, that means actually we go back to the Charvak philosophy then. What do the Charvak say? They say at birth, the journey starts, and at death, it's going to end. So in between, whatever I do, I can do. There's nothing after death. There is nothing after death. It began at birth. There was nothing before birth, and there's not going to be anything after death. And this lifespan is the only thing that I have been given to enjoy, and I can enjoy it to the fullest without any limits, without any boundaries. So at least to put it's like putting the fear of God that there is this jiva who travels. Now Bhagwan is going to explain the traveling also, but Bhagwan introduces jiva so that please understand, if you can't grasp the idea that you're that pure consciousness and you're the non-doer, that is very, very difficult to understand. Okay, consider yourself to be the jiva and the doer. Who is doing? I am doing. Who is the I? It is this jiva, which is nothing but a part of pure consciousness. But remember that the jiva is going to live even after your body dies. And the jiva is going to take on another body to exhaust the results of the actions that you're doing in this life. And that fear has to be there in our mind that, you know what, this body will die. Yes, but that is not the end of the journey. It is not that I am dying. Charvak say, I will die. Then after that, there's nothing, finished. I is finished. Vedanta says, no. It is not finished. It's only a comma. So the jiva is going to start its life and it will have to reap the results of the karmas that it has sown in this birth. And that we must remember. And that is one of, we must therefore try to do good actions and try to do good. So that is also a very important reason that this jiva is introduced. The concept of jiva is in, though jiva is not there, actually, but the concept has to be there. And we have to have that fear in the beginning stages of our life until we reach pure consciousness, which is a way, way, ways away. Consider yourself to be the jiva and consider yourself also who is, see, if they say we are pure consciousness, then where is the point of liberation? So there is this jiva who feels limited, who feels bound, who is doing things, doing good things, doing bad things, and it will have to have some consequences. That is the entity that will have to bear the consequences. So at least with the fear of those consequences, do good now. It's like, that's why they say smoking is injurious to the health, right? There's always this in the cigarette commercials or movies or whatever. Why it is to put some fear in your mind. Don't smoke because you know what? The result is not going to be good. So that is why this jiva is extremely important. Jiva becomes, it is important because, and the other thing is I am considering myself, those who are ignorant, they think they are the body. Okay, forget them. But those who are in the middle, like us, seekers, those who have are on this path, this concept of jiva has to be held on to, has to be considered as real until you reach the state of non-doership. So until then, this jiva is real for us. It is not really real, but until then, it should be considered as real. And it should be remembered that whatever this jiva does, it's going to have to reap the results at some point. Maybe in this life, maybe in the next life. That's why this jiva becomes very important. Okay. And what does this jiva do? We had only completed the first line. Mana shashthan indriyani. Shashtha. Mana is considered as the sixth sense. We are very familiar with the five sense organs, but the mind is always considered as the king of the senses or the sixth sense because the sense organs, and I've told you this many, many times, the sense organs really cannot function in the sense they will not perceive without the backing of the mind. And we have seen that many times. I mean, people walk by and they say hello and then like your mind is not there. Oh, did I meet you? Yeah, I did say good morning to you in the morning. That is extremely common experience. And that's why mind is also considered as a sense organ. And it is considered as the sixth sense organ. And it is also considered as the king of the senses because it can control the senses. And without it, the eyes may see, but if the mind is not there, the seeing of the eyes is no good. So that's why the mind becomes important there. The mind is the most important sense organ. That is one reason. The second reason is, see, eyes can only see. Ears can only hear. They do only their one specific function, but the mind can hear, see, touch, taste, and smell. The mind can do all. You get it? Because the mind knows what the taste is. The mind sees, oh, this is this. The mind smells. The mind can decipher the smell. This is a good smell. This is fragrance. This is rose. This is jasmine or whatever it is. So the mind actually can perceive all the five sense objects in the mind. You get this point? Clear? Okay. So mana shashthani indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. This karshati word draws to it. Gurudev has this thing. What it actually means is attracts. And Krishna, the word Krishna has come from this. Karshati and Krishna, they come from the same root. Karsha, to attract. So what this jiva is doing is that it is itself formless. And to enjoy this world, it needs all the senses. It needs the body. Jiva is subtle, okay? But if jiva feels like eating something, jiva needs a tongue and a mouth. And then hands also jiva needs because the who's going to put things in the mouth? His own hand is going to put it. So Jiva needs the mind, the senses. And therefore it is said, this Jiva, it attracts to itself these senses. It holds on to the senses, the Jiva, because the Jiva wants to enjoy. And Jiva knows that without the senses, I cannot enjoy. I cannot take in sense perceptions. I need my eyes. I need my nose, my tongue, my skin, my ears. Okay, yes.
And the reason the Jiva wants to enjoy, is that because of the vasanas?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. Correct. Okay. Because that Jiva, the very fact that Jiva has taken birth, I told you, is a testimony to the fact that there are vasanas which have to be fulfilled. Also, that Jiva has performed actions. Those results are going to come. They have to be experienced. Maybe good, maybe bad, maybe sukha, maybe dukkha. And to experience anything that Jiva needs this thing. Suppose if the Jiva has to experience a heat, burn, then it needs skin. Because that skin has to touch the hot surface and then that burn will be experienced by that Jiva. So that's why the Jiva attracts, draws to it these sense organs, and then it starts its journey in this life. Now, what does it do? Shariram yadavapnoti yachapyutkramati shvaraha grahitvaitani sayati vayurgandha nivashayat. When the Lord obtains a body and when he leaves it, he takes these and goes with them as the wind takes the scents from their seeds. The first thing to note in this verse, extremely important, is that the last word in the first line, Ishwaraha, and Gurudev also said, when the Lord obtains a body. Now, this Lord, even though it is in capital L, does not indicate pure consciousness. That is the first thing to be noted here. So what is meant by Ishwara is Jiva. In the previous verse, when he said Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha, that Jiva itself is referred to here as Ishwara. Why? Why is Bhagwan referring that? To tell us that Jiva and Ishwara are not separate. They are one only. Now, it is like this. This part has to be understood first very clearly. And this example I've given you many, many times. It is me only, but when my children are standing here, I am mom. And when my parents are standing on this side, I am daughter. But it's me only. It is the same thing with this entity called as Jiva or Ishwara. When you are crying and complaining, you are Jiva. When you are smiling and not complaining, you are Ishwara. Same entity. I am mother on one side, I am daughter on the other side. If I cry, and we saw that in chapter 2, if you are smiling, you are Ishwara. If you are crying, you are Jiva. If you say, I am the body, you are Jiva. If you say, I am in the body, you are Ishwara. How do you become Ishwara? It is same. What is your thought process? If you say, I am going to do and I am going to enjoy, Jiva. I am a witness of all that is being done. Things are happening around me and I will witness the enjoyment, Ishwara. I am untouched by anything, Ishwara. Everything, oh, this happened to me, that happened to me, this, today I'm happy, tomorrow I'm sorrowful. That is Jiva. Is the same entity functioning like this. And what is differentiating them is your thought. That's it. Thought only. Nothing, no action to be done. Same actions you keep doing. Whatever is your job, you go to your job, you do your duty, you do everything. Don't think I am doing it. When you don't think like that, you are Ishwara. When you think like that, you are down to the position of Jiva. Is this clear? Jiva. Okay. Now, shariram yada apnoti. Shariram yat avapnoti. Avapnoti is to obtain and utkramati is to leave. Utkramati. So what is happening is shariram, this Jiva, there is a present birth, there is a jiva. This jiva has collected vasanas. This is referring to birth and death. Avapnoti is birth and utkramanti is death. There is death, then birth, then death, then birth. And it, this is going like this. Okay, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth. Now, so birth, when it happens, let's take death first. Okay, when does death happen? When the subtle body leaves the gross body. But when the subtle body leaves, it also carries with it a whole package of vasanas. That's why it is jivatma. Not only atma, it is jiva representing the vasanas. So this utkramati, when it leaves, and it, that's why it's called Ishvara. It is Ishvara, but now you have got this package of vasanas. You have thought that you are the body. You have thought that, oh, I am going to die. The one who thinks I'm going to die, jiva. The one who says my body is definitely going to die, Ishvara. Ishvara. That is the difference. So you carry this, the jiva is carrying all these baggage of vasanas, and then it goes and finds itself a womb, which it thinks will be the best womb for me to exhaust all these vasanas that have fructified. It is, I've told you many, many times, the jiva decides the mother. Mother does not decide the child. Jiva decides. This is the mother where I can fulfill my this thing. Just in yesterday's class, I gave the example of Arthur Ashe. Arthur Ashe, the Wimbledon, the tennis player. His father was a gardener at the tennis Wimbledon. And he wanted to be a tennis player. This jiva had this vasanas of becoming a tennis player. So he chooses the gardener as a father. Because why? Right from childhood now, he's growing up on those Wimbledon gardens. He's literally growing up there, that his father is tending to the lawns, right? So this is how the jiva chooses. And then he became went on to become a great tennis player, world famous. So this is what is done. And how does it carry these vasanas with it? Grahitvaitani sanyati vayur gandha nivashayat. See, when you walk even near a rose garden, I mean, we have Queen Elizabeth right here, and in the summer, in August, if I'm just even on the road, I can get the fragrance of the roses. I know I'm approaching the rose garden. Or when it starts fading, then I know I'm going away from that rose garden. That fragrance is not seen. It is not seen. Just like this vayu, the air, carries the fragrance. It could carry odor also, bad odor also, but let's say fragrance. Just like it carries the fragrance, these vasa, to tell us that these vasanas are in subtle form. The jiva carries this in the subtle impressions are carried. When we say karmas are carried, not a physical action is not going anywhere. Suppose if I killed somebody, that killing is not going. But that intention behind that, which is in subtle form, that is getting carried like the air carrying the fragrance or the bad odor. Okay, grahita, it takes this, grahan, to graha is to like grasp, hold. So it holds on to these subtle vasanas that are unfulfilled and takes it along with him, the jiva, just like air is carrying the fragrance. This is the journey of the jiva that Bhagwan is talking about. One more difference. When the sense organs are under our control, Ishvara, we are Ishvara. When we are running after the sense organs, we are jiva. Same entity becomes jiva, same entity is Ishvara. But how is your thought process? What is your thought process? That is what is determining whether you're in the position of Ishvara or in the position of jiva. That's why even in chapter 2, I told you, do you want to keep smiling or do you want to keep crying? Then you be on Bhagwan's side, means Ishvara. Otherwise, jiva, stay there, sorrowful, constantly crying. Okay? So this is how the journey is now beginning. Okay? It begins with death and then the birth will happen. And then again. Theek hai? All good? Okay. Shrotram chakshusparshanam cha rasanam ghranam eva cha adhishtaya manashchayam vishayanupasevate. Presiding over the ear, the eye, the touch, the taste and the smell, and also the mind, he enjoys the sense objects. He who jiva slash Ishwara. He carried all these vasanas in subtle form. Then he found himself a womb where he thought, this is the best womb for me to exhaust all these vasanas, which are now fructified. And he needs the help of the sense organs. I told you, without the sense organs, the jiva can't do anything. Even Ishwara, that's why Virat is there, the Virat form, you know, on the totality. He needs a body to even create. Even he needs a body. He can't just create like that. That's why the concept of Virat is given. Virat is that universal Purusha, you know, the Purusha Sukta from Purusha Sukta. So here, these are the ones that he carries. These are the five sense organs. Shrotram, Chakshu, Sparsha. Shrotram is ear, Chakshu eyes, Sparsha is touch, Rasa is tongue, and taste, and Ghana is nose, smell. So these are the five sense perceptions that the jiva needs. And then vishaya anupasevate, vishaya here, objects. So he enjoys these various objects in the world. And I told you, this world, you think there are millions of objects, but they all can be boiled down to only five: color and form, touch, taste, smell, and sound. So there are only five objects in this world. Either you hear them, or you taste them, or you touch them, or you smell them, right? So there are only five. So these five to enjoy, he needs, jiva needs this. Okay, and he says he enjoys, H is in capital, indicating that no, actually it is the one who enjoys is jiva. The one who thinks I am the one that's going to enjoy all this is jiva, which is actually Ishwara. All right, next verse, any questions? This is the journey. This is what Bhagwan is explaining, how this journey is now happening for the jiva, because this is the jiva that needs to now realize that it is not jiva, but it is Ishwara. This is an important verse, 10.
Yeah.
Utkram, did somebody say something?
Yeah, Jayaji, I just had one question. When we talk about the three gunas in Prakriti, and we say we, like, if we have transcended them, then we are Ishwara, right?
Correct. Correct.
And if we are still, like, floating, if we are the slaves of the gunas.
Correct.
Then we will be still the jivas, right?
Correct. Correct. Jiva is under the control of the gunas. Gunas are under the control of Ishwara.
Mm-hmm.
I told you the three gunas should be like our three slaves. So when I need to read, study, do my homework, I have to be able to call in sattva. When I need to do work, I need to be able to call in rajas. And when I need to rest, if I'm ill, if I've had surgery, if I'm in the hospital, I need to rest, I need to invoke tamas. That time people get all, oh, I'm getting bored and I want to see a movie and somebody should come and visit me. No. That is tamas. Enjoy your tamasic nature. Correct. That is very correct. That's one more thing. All right. Utkramantam sitam vapi bhunjanam va gunanvitam vimudhananupashanti pashanti jnana chakshushaha. Him who departs, stays and enjoys, who is united with the gunas, the deluded do not see, but they behold who possess the eye of knowledge. Here the first word we have to understand is vimudha. The second line basically says vimudha na anupashyanti and pashyanti. So na anupashyanti does not, vimudha does not see, and pashyanti, he sees, who has the jnana chakshusha, who has the jnana chakshu. So vimudha is the first word to understand here. There are three words. There is mudha, then there is amudha, and then there is vimudha. So mudha means foolish. Amudha means not foolish, wise. A, when we put the suffix a, it becomes the opposite. So amudha is not foolish. And in this line, amudha and nyan chakshushaha, they're synonyms. it's same. This Jnana Chakshusha, and I'll explain that, that is Amudha. Now, Vimudha is Visheshena Mudha, who has done a PhD in foolishness. So he's extremely foolish. Now, the point is, Vimudha do not see. And Amudha or Jnana Chakshusha, they see. So what does the Vimudha not see? What does he not see? He sees, he does not see that he is in the body. He is not the body. He does not see that. Whatever characteristics I told you of Jiva, they all fall under Vimudha. So the one who thinks I am the body, I am a slave of the gunas, I am under the control of the sense organs, or not saying I am under the control, but behaving like that, he is a Vimudha. He doesn't see that actually what it is he is not the body. He is away, he is something other than the body. The body is his instrument. He is in the body. He doesn't see that. He doesn't see that the actions that are happening are because of the gunas. He thinks I am the one that is doing all these actions. He doesn't see the interplay of the gunas. He doesn't see that. Okay? He doesn't see that all the things, like he thinks he's enjoying. That is a Vimudha. Now, he doesn't see. And Pashyanti Jnana Chakshu. Jnana Chakshu has to be understood as a vision that has been gained through the study of the scriptures. And the simple day-to-day example of Jnana Chakshu is the example that I've always quoted you. A parent and a child looking at the sunrise. So the child is saying, look how the sun is climbing up on the horizon or moving on the horizon. And the parent knows, even though he says, yes, 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 that is very nice. The parent knows that the sun is not moving. The knowing is Jnana Chakshu, eye of knowledge or eye of wisdom. The knowing, it is not a physical, you know, with Lord Shiva, three eyes. It is not like he's a biological freak where he has another third eye here, physical eye, but it is the eye of wisdom. In Shiva's case, they say one is a eye of love, one is justice, and one is compassion. These are the three eyes. So justice, if it is done with love, because you love somebody, then that is not going to be correct. It has to be dealt out with compassion as well, like not just harsh justice, but with compassion. Here, that knowledge that has arisen due to the study of the scriptures. What knowledge is that? I am not the body. I am in the body. I should not be under the control of the senses. The senses should be under my control. The gunas should be under my control. I should be using them as slaves. It is the gunas that are interacting and action is happening. Things are happening around me. I am not doing anything. This understanding, when it is arising out of the study of the scriptures, is called Jnana Chakshu. Chakshu is eye of knowledge or eye of wisdom it is. And that is the thought that tells you that I see the sky, but there is no sky. I see the blueness in the sky, but there is no blue color. That is that Jnana Chakshu. Okay. Now, what is it that they see and don't see? Means the wise see and the unwise don't see is the first line. So we go to the first line. Utkramantam stitam wise or. Or. So in English, we would say this or that, but in Sanskrit, it comes at the end. So it's actually utkramantam va stitam va. Leaving, departing. Utkramantam is leaving, departing from the body. Stitam is staying in the body. Okay. Va api bhunjanam va gunanvitam. So how it is to be, you break it up in one way, is stitam api stitam api va bhunjanam, stitam api va gunanvitam. Okay, so let's see this. Stitam means when the jiva is in the body. So when the person is alive, basically. Okay. When the person is alive, bhunjanam is what? Enjoying. Bhunj coming from bhajdhatu is to enjoy. Or gunanvitam. What gunanvitam is referring to doing. Because the word guna is there. Okay. So this sattva, rajas and tamas, when the jiva is stitam, is in the body, when this body is living, when this present embodiment is going on, the actions are happening because of the gunas. This is seen by the wise and vimuda na anupashyanti. So the vimuda, the foolish people, do not see that the actions are happening because of the gunas. So this bhunjanam and gunanvitam is referring to action and enjoyment. So the vimudha, the foolish thing, I am acting and I will enjoy. They don't see that the gunas are acting and that enjoyment is going to, whatever is in my destiny, that result is going to come because action is happening. Every action, you do it for happiness, but it may or may not give you happiness. I've told that many times also. So this vimudha don't see that actions are being done by the gunas and I am only a witness. Vimudha na anupashyanti. He doesn't see. Who sees it? The one who has the eye of wisdom. The one who has jnana chakshu, who is a mudha. Okay? And then utkramantam. So when he's leaving, utkramantam is to get up and leave. So when this jiva is leaving, it is going to carry. It is the jiva that is leaving it is only the body that is dying. Jiva is not dying. The jiva never dies. Why? It's a part of your consciousness. How can the jiva die? Okay. So whether living in the body or whoever is living in the body while alive or whoever is leaving is the jiva. That is to be understood. That is the wise person understands that I am not dying. The body is dying. Yes, body is going to die. But the vimudha thinks I am dying. I'm going to die. And therefore there is fear. That is another thing. Jiva is always under fear. He is very fearful. Ishvara is not fearful. That's another difference. So the point is, jiva is introduced. Now the idea is to inquire into the jiva. You inquire who this jiva is. Who are you? This is what Upadesh Sar, Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi has given us that. Who is the one that is, because you see, I constantly go on saying, right? Don't I say, I'm seeing, I'm speaking, I'm happy, I'm sad. So who is that I? That is this jiva. And so Bhagavan is introducing, telling us that there is this jiva who is my part. You inquire into that jiva. Inquire into the jiva. We are more bothered about the body. We want to beautify our body and keep it healthy and keep it long living and forever. If we could live in the body, we would. So all that we're thinking about is the body and how that body will enjoy. So he's saying, think into the jiva. Think, understand that it is nothing but Ishvara. And how do I gain that Ishwaratva? You know, Ishwaratva, like how do I get closer to Ishvara is by following these tenets. Like I am not the body. I am in the body. I am not unhappy. I am always happy. I am the witness of the thoughts. That is another one. When I say I'm witnessing this happy thought coming, I'm witnessing the sad thought coming, instead of I am happy, I am sad, I am jealous, I am angry, jiva. Anybody who says I am this, that's why Gurudev is given. Not I am angry, anger is arising in me. So you've separated yourself from the anger. that I see. So I'm the witness of this anger arising in me. I'm a witness of the happy thought arising in me. I'm a witness of the sad thought arising in me. And the Amudha, the Jnana Chakshu, they say this, they see this. And the Vimudha doesn't see this. He doesn't see that he's a witness of the thought. He thinks he's the thought. Therefore, he says, I'm angry. I'm sad. I'm happy. Okay. We have to understand also here that it is not the body, though the actually physical seeing is done by the body. Why? Because eyes are physically seeing, but actually it is the jiva who is seeing, because through the mind. Actually, the mind has to be with the eyes, mind, and in the mind is the jiva, is the ego. So actually who is seeing is jiva. And we say that also, I am seeing, but our understanding has to change to I am witnessing the seeing. Then I'm Ishvara. This is, practice is required for this. Okay. So at least we have to understand this. That's why this chapter has got everything in it. Complete science. That's why I told you this is called as a Shastra. Bhagavan himself will say this is a Shastra. Any questions?
Jayaji, I have a question. Forgive me for, it may sound odd one. You know, there's a term, Dehi. What is the difference between Dehi and Jiva?
Same, no difference. Okay. Just synonyms. Dehi is the one living in the Deha.
Okay.
When you say Deha, then Dehi. And the one living in the Deha, the body, is the Jiva, is the ego.
Thank you.
Dehi and Jiva is absolutely same. All right. Okay. Shall we go ahead? Let's see if I have not, hopefully I have not missed, if I have missed something, next time. All right. Now, next.
Yatanto yoginashchainam pashyantyatmanyavasthitam yatanto pyakritatmanah nainam pashyantyachetasaha. The seekers striving for perfection behold him dwelling in the self. But the unrefined and unintelligent, even though striving, see him not. So yatanto yogihi. Yogi here is a seeker. Not a realized master, but a seeker. So there is a seeker who is putting in the correct efforts. See, there is efforts. And that effort could be correct or incorrect. So if you're putting effort in the wrong direction, then you are not going to reach the goal that you've... There was one man, it seems, he was climbing and he took so much... so much trouble he took to climb the ladder. He climbed and climbed and climbed, and then he reached the top and he thought, oh, I reached my goal. And then he realized, oh, that was the wrong building that he had the ladder on. So he did put in a lot of effort, but when he reached there, oh man, this isn't the building that I had to climb up, to climb some other building. So effort is there. Where are we putting the effort is a very important point. Are we putting effort in the material world to gain something in the material world? Or are we putting effort to gain something in the spiritual world? And then the efforts are different. Effort in the material world is action. Action, 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 action. That you have to study hard. You have to, whatever. You need a promotion. You need a job. You need a this. You need a that. Full of action it is. But in the spiritual world, action na karmana na prajaya dhanena tyage na ekya amrutatva manasho. Upanishad says that you cannot reach this goal by karma. So when you put in a whole lot of karma and you think that you will get this spiritual goal, you're climbing up the wrong ladder. That is why Bhagwan has given the technique of karma yoga. So to go inside, introverted is where your spiritual journey begins. When you start withdrawing the senses from the outside world and focusing on the thought, these are the thoughts that we have to focus on. who is the one that is enjoying, who is, you know, who is the one that is traveling through this body? Is this his body? Is the end of the body the end of me? Those type of thoughts, yogis, they have withdrawn their senses, their attention from the outside world, and then they have fixed it on the Lord. Therefore, the method for spiritual realization is Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. Now, Shravanam is listening. Are you listening to something from the material world, or are you listening to the scriptures? Okay, not that full 24 hours you can do, and this again differs for different people. In the young age, you have to do action in the material world. That's why in chapter 3 now, Bhagwan will give the technique of karma yoga. So what he's saying is, yes, scriptures realize, Shastra realizes that we have a lot of desires. That's why we took birth. If we had no desires left, we wouldn't be born. We would have been merged with the pure consciousness. So the very fact that birth has happened tells us that there are desires. And Shastra says, okay, I understand that you have desires. You do action to fulfill them. I understand that also. What I'm telling you is your ultimate goal, and this was Swamiji also in the Yajna said, that the ultimate goal for all human beings is moksha, ultimate goal. So when you're working through your short-term and mid-term and long-term goals, you do action in such a way that you will be fit for moksha when the time comes. And the very simple example is when you first start your job, you know that you're going to have to retire at a certain age. It's a shoo-in. Like there is no, oh, I may not retire. Unless you die before that, if you live long enough, you're going to have to retire. So what do? To have a comfortable retirement, you put a little bit of your money into RRSP or savings account or whatever, don't you? All right. Now, that is for the material comfort. But for spiritual evolution, what you need to put aside is some time given to reading, to satsang. Time, money is not going to give you moksha. Money is going to give you a comfortable retired life. That is what money is going to give. Money has its importance. Okay. So it is going to give you a comfortable life. And in that comfortable life, you can choose to either spend time in studies or in enjoyment. You can enjoy the money. You can keep traveling. You can do this, that. So that's where your choice is. But if you listen to the scriptures from the beginning, and if you understand that the ultimate goal is the same for all, see, immediate goal is something that each one of us would do right after this class. That's an immediate goal. Short-term goal is, you know, I have to get this job or something. Long-term goal is, oh, I have this mortgage on my house, which is like 25 years. So that's a long-term goal. And these three goals will be different for each and every one of us. Even in one family, there will be, the children will have their own goals. The mom and dad will have their own goals. So this, the first three, the short term, the mid term, and the long term goal is different for each and every one of us. But Shastra says, this is what the scriptures are saying, that the ultimate goal of moksha is common for everybody across the board, across the universe, whether you're a Hindu, non-Hindu, this, that, everything, that moksha goal is the same. So just like retirement is, everybody who works has to retire at some day, right? So retirement is definite. And everyone is now putting some money towards that retirement fund. That way, towards that, understand that that is the ultimate goal. And towards that goal, invest time. Invest time. No money is required. So this is either you do satsang every week, do some bit of reading every week. Rajas, you know, when the mind is rajas, to calm it down, this reading will help. That's why somebody asked, why don't I retain this? Because there's too much rajas in the mind. A rajasic mind, either it misunderstands, or if it understands, it doesn't retain. That's the problem with the rajasic mind. So developing sattva little by little will help towards the ultimate goal. And that is how, when the person is striving, he will ultimately get the goal. Maybe not in this life, maybe in a future life, but it'll pay off. every action has a result. So if you're putting in time to read some scriptural material every day, it will, your responsibilities in life, as your children grow up, they go away, then that reading time will go on increasing. It should. In Vanaprastha Ashram, they say it's Swadhyaya is the primary duty of a Vanaprastha. Who is a Vanaprastha? Whose children are independent and gone on their own. Then Swadhyaya has to take precedence over everything else. Okay, so that type of yatanto is striving. The one who is striving like that will reach that goal. He'll reach that goal. And for that ultimate goal, certain things which I have always told you before also, a life of discipline is extremely important. A self-imposed self-discipline is very important. So in your own schedule, whatever is my discipline, others cannot follow. Whatever is your discipline, I cannot follow. So in your own life, have a discipline. Even if it is a work life, even if you're working, you're a student life, make it a point. I will be in class on time. I will do my homework on time. I will keep my room clean. I will, spend only this much time watching TV. Some discipline has, it's not like, I like that movie, so today I'll watch till 12 o'clock. No, I will go to bed at this time. I will get up at this time. That you think it is, people think, what is there? What is the big deal? Today, one day, tomorrow, Sunday, I can sleep in. No. Now in spiritual seeking, whether it is a Saturday or a Sunday, you go to bed at 10, you go to bed at 10 and you get up at 5, you get up at 5. Not that it is Sunday today, why don't I sleep until 10? That shouldn't be there. That shouldn't be there for a spiritual seeker. So set a goal. That's why in ashram, they never said Sunday, no chanting. Sunday, the first thing, chanting was always there, which is 6:30 in the morning. Other class, at least they canceled during the day, but chanting, they didn't cancel. Why? Get up early and get in that temple and do the chanting class. So discipline is very important. Okay. I've told you this many times. Then the other striving is following the scripture. All these are in the scriptures. It's not that I am telling you. If they were not in the scriptures, we wouldn't have been following them in the ashram. Whatever is we did in the ashram is as per the Shastras. It's complete guidance from the Shastra. Gurudev has set that schedule. And that is, they're still following the same thing, right? So this is the striving that is required. Not money. Putting away money. No. Yeah, you do put away money for your retired life. Definitely. If you don't have any money, you will not be able to do studies. So you do that. But along with it, invest time. So what he's saying is yatanto yogi paschantap avasita. Ultimately, you will see that goal. You will realize that goal. Okay? These are the things that need to be followed. This is the striving. What striving is this that Bhagwan is talking about? This is the striving. So strive in the right direction. People are striving. Everybody's now, Black Friday sales. God knows how many people are going to go stand in the cold in the line to get a TV cheap or whatever, right? That is also striving. That is also hard work. No. We cannot deny that. You think I will ever do that? No. People, Boxing Day, they'll go stand in line for tickets. Now, of course, concerts are not. Otherwise, they'll go stand whole line. That is also striving only. So striving has to be in the right direction, though. And then yatanto api akritatmanaha. Akritatmana is one that's the one who doesn't follow a disciplined life, who is not following the scriptural injunctions, who is not, doing effort in the wrong direction. Akritatmanaha is one who is doing effort in the wrong direction. So he wants things in the material world and he's looking for happiness in the material world and running after that. Nainam pashyanta chetasaha, achetasaha, the unintelligent, they will never see that. Unintelligent here is not like, it's not like when we say this person is very, so the person could be very intelligent. He could be a grade student. That is not the intelligence here that is being talked about. The subtle intellect, in intellect also, there's gross and subtle. I think I've given you this example also. There is a blade and there is an axe, right? the blade, to shave, you need a blade, and to cut a tree, you need the axe. Both are sharp, both cut. But for a certain type of action, a certain type of instrument is required. So for shaving, you need blade. You cannot shave with an axe, and you cannot cut a tree with a blade. That way, this intelligence also, there is what is known as a gross intelligence, and there is what is known as a subtle intellect. So this gross intellect is definitely required, how you have to grow your mutual funds, and how, where do you invest, and how do you do this? And in the gross world, the gross intellect is required. What is called as street smarts. You know, you require that for success in the gross world. But for success in the spiritual world, you need the subtle intellect. And this is the intelligence that he's an unintelligent. That doesn't mean that this person is a dumb person. He's not dumb. He's extremely intelligent, but the intelligence is gross. So in the material world, in the outside world, his intellect is absolutely brilliant. He's brilliant. He's a brilliant investor and hedge funds and this and that. And if you want to make money, go to him. And that, he's very intelligent. But he doesn't have the subtle intellect, which is required to know the subtle truths of life. Okay. We'll stop up to here is the journey of the jiva. So we've completed like one topic here, the journey of the jiva. And now what Bhagwan is going to start doing from 12 to 16 in the next four verses, he's going to be talking of his vibhutis, where you can find him. See, he said, yatanto yoginash chainam, right? Those who are striving. So how do I do this striving? In what direction should I look to find him? That is what now Bhagwan will explain in the next four verses. And he starts from very, very far away from the sun, and he comes to Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva. So he comes closer and closer and closer to you. And this is how we have to train our mind to look, to see. And if we train our mind that way, and if we strive in that direction, then we will see him. And when I say see him, please understand, realize him. Physically, nobody can see him. Of course, there are people like Ramakrishna Paramahansa, but then we don't have that kind of punya, so let's not kid ourselves. But striving has to be in the right direction. Any questions? Yes.
I'm just curious about when we were reviewing and we were speaking about the two theories of explaining the part versus the infinite. In the space example, you know, there's walls dividing it. In the sun example, there's a bucket that's reflecting it. In those examples, the bucket and the wall are different from the actual, like, you know, the sun is reflecting in something that is other than it. But when it refers to Brahman, the same, both are Brahman, right? I'm not explaining this correctly, but.
No, space, yeah. Space is Brahman and the sun is Brahman.
And then in that metaphor, then what would the buckets be and the walls be?
Wall is the body.
Okay.
The pot is the body.
Mm.
Okay. So it is this body. And inside, the space inside the body, the jiva, I think, is inside the body and is separate from everybody else.
Mm.
But when this body merges, dies, then this space inside, means the jiva inside, is the same. Like if this jiva were to have realized in this life, it'll merge with infinity, with pure consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
The wall, the idea is that the wall is a superimposition. See, I made these walls and I'm calling this my den or my study. I break this wall, that's it. It can't be called as a den.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In the bucket is the body and the water is the mental pool. And that's how the reflection is happening. So when you remove the bucket, the reflection is gone, right?
But even the body itself, right? That is made up of the five elements, which eventually, like when you boil it all down, it's all the same material, right?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that that was
correct. And
okay.
All that material, the five elements, have come from Brahman only.
Hmm. Okay.
Right? Space, fire, earth, water, and this thing. They all have come from there, from Maya. Brahman plus Maya, huh? Not just pure consciousness plus Maya, which is Ishwara.
Okay.
Those Thank two, you. Yeah, those are the those two examples are given to tell us Abhinna Nimitta Upadana Vivarta Karana. See, there are two philosophies where the material cause and the efficient cause. And the common example is, see, when there is a potter who is making a pot. Okay, so there is a potter who is the efficient cause. Efficient is the intelligence. And the pot or the mud is the material cause. And in that, the wheel is the instrumental cause. So in this material world, when anything is created, three things are required. Okay, say ornament, gold ornament. Gold is required, material. If I want to make a gold chain, I need gold. Then I need the goldsmith who knows how to melt that gold and make the chain. And then he needs his little tools. And these three in the material world are different, right? The potter is not the clay. Clay is not the wheel. So they are three different. Whereas the question is, in creation, is it the same? When we say that this creation has come from God, is there a God who is the efficient cause? Then on this side is the material, and then on this side is the instrument. So are there three different things? And there are not. That is the thing.
So it just depends on the level that you're looking at it. If you're looking at it, there are three things.
Correct.
But all three have come from the same source.
Correct.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Correct. Because see, our experiences in the world, no matter what you see a computer, there is the whatever that plastic or whatever that goes in there, then there is somebody who put it together, right? And then he used some tools. So in any example in the material world, we'll have three different things. Always. There has to be an efficient cause, there has to be a material cause, and there has to be an instrumental cause. But in the case of creation, God himself is the material cause, God himself is the instrumental cause, and God himself is the efficient cause. And when we say that all this cause is God alone, then whatever you see is an illusion. That's the next step.
Okay.
But for Balvihar, you would only stay at that point. You understand? In Balvihar, you will say, you know, there is a potter and a wheel and this. There is God, but please understand that the material is also God and the instrument is also God. And then you stop there. You don't say then it is. Just understand only that much. Only to that level you go in Balvihar. Okay?
Jari,
yes.
But then when we say God has all these three things, then what is the role of Prakriti in this then?
He uses Prakriti. Prakriti is the material cause.
Huh. So then that means when you say the God plus the material cause is Prakriti, and that is why creation happens.
Yeah, because Brahman plus Maya. Maya is Prakriti. Right? So Ishvara. Therefore, creation always comes from Ishvara, God. Creation doesn't come from pure consciousness. Therefore, you should not go to pure consciousness level for the children.
Yeah,
you only stay at the level of Ishwara. I told you that in the beginning, that only you have to stay up to Ishwara, up to God. And no point telling them the world is an illusion, because they're too young to hear.
They're too young to understand.
Even we don't see, we think, really? Is that really?
For to teach to the children first, we have to understand.
Just teaching them that he's the material instrument and efficient is already hard enough for them. Correct. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So just stay there and then, yeah, it's okay. And then work hard. You want to get ahead in life. For children, you must tell them. You must work hard. You must come first and all those kinds of things you must say. Okay? All right. Okay. ओम स्वस्ति प्रजाभ्यः परिपालयन्तां न्यायेन मार्गेण महिं महिषाः गोब्राह्मणेभ्यः शुभमस्तु नित्यं लोकाः समस्ताः सुखिनो भवन्तु काले वर्षतु पर्जन्यः पृथिवी सस्य शालिनी देशोऽयं शोभरहितः ब्राह्मणाः सन्तु निर्भयाः ओं सर्वेषां स्वस्ति भवतु सर्वेषां शान्तिर्भवतु सर्वेषां पूर्णं भवतु सर्वेषां मङ्गलं भवतु सर्वे भवन्तु सुखिनः सर्वे सन्तु निरामयाः सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत् ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ओम् हरि ओम् एव्रिबडी आई विल सी यू नेक्स्ट मण्डे